Welcome to Voice Rising with Kara Johnstad. Enjoy weekly conversations with leading luminaries, pioneering visionaries, singers, poets, musicians, and sound healers as we explore the profound role our voice plays on the path to self-realization and global enlightenment. The internationally acclaimed singer, composer, author, healer, recording artist, voice expert, creator of Voice Your Essence, and founder of the School of Voice, Kara Johnstad, uses her extraordinary spiritual gifts to empower others. Everything in this world vibrates. Everything has a frequency. A pioneer in the field of voice work and transformational songwriting. Her breakthrough methods are helping thousands of people worldwide fine-tune their body-mind-spirit system and unlock the energetic frequencies of limitless creativity, health, and abundance. Share your voice, ask your questions, join in the conversation. Receive life-changing, positive transformation and rise together to create a sound world. And here's your host, Kara Johnstad.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to Voice Rising. With me in studio today is the sacred music composer, recording artist, multi-instrumentalist, and ecstatic vocalist, Jai Uttal. Jai combines influences from India with American rock and jazz to create a stimulating and exotic multicultural fusion that is truly world spirit music. So, Jai, I warmly welcome you to Voice Rising. It's so good to have you with me.
Thank you so much, Kara. It's a pleasure to be here.
Nice. So, I have some lovely questions, and I'm so curious to dive into the path. Actually, this interview is called Bhakti Bliss, the Path of Devotion. Music is a link to our soul, and every note that we play or sing brings us closer to God and closer to the souls that are around us. Share with us how music helped you to experience all your many shades and colors of your soul.
Well, I started my fascination with music when I was very little. I began playing piano when I was six. And I found just that the sound of the notes, the reverberations of the note clusters and melodies, or because I didn't really know anything, but just the sound just was like, oh my God, this is what I want to explore. This is where I want to go. Mm-hmm, so, and I did grow up in a musical family. My father was in the record business, and he. Specialized in R&B and soul and some pop and some disco later, but he put out records, he produced records and so every week he would bring home the top 20 singles from the radio stations and ask the opinion of myself and my sister. And so we were surrounded by music. But then when I started playing the piano, I started taking lessons and I actually went very deeply, very fast, but something happened, which I can't really remember, that completely turned me off to it, and I had to stop my lessons. And I, at that point, I said, forget it. I'm not interested in music anymore. And I kind of went into a shell. Then a couple of years after that, I met a guy my age, who was playing banjo. And he passed me his banjo and said, oh, yeah, give it a feel. And I strummed it. And, I was living in an internal world of fear and anxiety. And that's a whole long story we don't need to get into. But I felt very unsafe in my incarnation. And I strummed the strings on that banjo, and suddenly there was like this golden aura of protection around me. Now, I'm being poetic. It's not like I had a vision, but it was more like a feeling. And I got a banjo and then became completely immersed in it, and it became my sanctuary, my the place in my life that I could feel safe. So I wasn't singing, you know. The thought of singing was way too vulnerable, or just, it was just like out of my even radar, the idea of myself singing. But I got deeply, deeply into the banjo. And then as I got older, well, I auditioned for music high school on banjo, and I had mastered all these incredibly complex fiddle pieces, violin pieces on my banjo. And so I got into the school. It was a really good music school in New York City. But, you know, you couldn't play banjo in the school because it had to be an orchestral instrument. And so I was happy with that. Give me violin. But they had too many violinists. So I ended up in the percussion section, whiling away my hours, tapping on wooden tables with drumsticks. But that didn't stop my exploration, you know. And I began to get into electric guitar, and I was very, very inspired by Jimi Hendrix, and not necessarily the hard rock side, but the side of him where, you know, he was producing all these otherworldly sounds on his electric guitar. And so I started to dive into that, and then I became exposed. This was all, you know, when I was still a young teenager. I became exposed for the first time to Indian music, Indian classical music. And right. I began to, you know, be really drawn into that. And you know, I started trying to emulate the ragas on my guitar and stuff, you know, just as a young person might do. But then I went to college, and on the night before my very, very first class in college, Ali Akbar Khan, who was the great maestro of the sarod and one of the greatest masters of Indian classical music, and perhaps one of the greatest masters of music ever, performed at my college. And the experience of listening to this classical Indian music live, you know, sitting in the front row, I turned the inside out. I realized, you know, I had this revelation that this was the music that was the closest to the actual life force, the you know, existence itself. So I quickly dropped out of college and came to California and began my studies with Maestro Khan. And that continued and continued and continued. And now somewhere in the first year there, Ali Akbar Khan said to all of his students, you have to study Indian singing or else I won't teach you instrumental music, because all music comes from the voice. And if you don't study singing, you're not going to learn the music. So very begrudgingly, you know, I went to the vocal classes and began to practice singing the ragas and you know, fine-tuning my voice and discovering the notes and the power of the notes. Now, somewhere along the same time, I began to become exposed to the practice of kirtan and mantra singing. And this, you know, really, really like was an explosion to me. It was just so, what a beautiful thing. You could sing these mantras with full voice in a group and nobody would actually notice you. And you know, the feeling of expression was very new to me and very wonderful. So then I was practicing the ragas, and I would make sure that nobody was home in the house that I was in. I had roommates and stuff at the time, and then I'd even look out the window and make sure there was none of the neighbors' cars were in their driveways. I was so self-conscious. But I started singing, and I started having these incredible feelings of just touching a certain wholeness within me that I never had ever, you know, never even thought about or felt or, you know. So anyway, this process went on. I went to India and I met my guru, Neem Karoli Baba, and he encouraged, particularly his Western disciples to sing kirtan, to sing mantras. You know, sometimes I thought he was just trying to keep us off the streets, keep us from getting into trouble. He said, go over there and just sing kirtan. We had no instruction in it, no leader. We all would just sit together and sing. And it was amazing how time would pass by just so quickly. And the other amazing thing, we would see how much joy it brought to not only ourselves, but to all the people there, and to particularly to our guru. And so the process evolved, and certain things happened, like things that actually brought deep, deep heartbreak and sadness to me. But through the vehicle of singing, I was somehow or another able to enter that sadness and enter that feeling of loss and aloneness in my heart and find a healing in it. Mm-hmm. It still took me many years before I would really sing in public. And then, you know, then, I don't know, somewhere when I was in my late 20s or 30s, people started asking me to come to their communities and sing kirtan and talk about kirtan. And I did it reluctantly, because I was very, very, very nervous. And somewhere along the line, that something came to me that said, Jai, you know, you're going to have to either sing or die. Mm-hmm. Now, it wasn't so dramatic like the death of the body, but there was a certain soul level thing. Was like, well, if you don't sing, your soul is going to wither up and die. You know, I was playing music and playing instruments, and I always love to play music and to play instruments, and they continue to give me a sense of that safety. But there was something different about singing. Singing was an access to the huge inner world that needed attention. And, you know, it's that place where all the incarnations mix up and bubble and want healing, and in the same place is that eternal glow of the soul of God. So you know, I started singing, and even then, for a long time, I could not sing in public without some substantial substance. You know, I became an addict, and I needed that support to be able to face the vulnerability of singing in public. Mm-hmm. Thankfully, 20 years ago, through some friends and through my guru and through my own knowledge or whatever, I became sober and since then have not needed that, although sometimes I still feel like I need it, but I don't need it. You know, an interesting thing that happened was, well, I started putting out CDs when I was, I think, 39 or 40. It's a late start for someone. But I felt that my CDs that I was putting out, well, the first one got so much attention. Because why? I don't know exactly why. But I was exploring the meeting place between Indian music, both classical and folk music, and Western harmony and Western music. And you know, this was just at the very beginning of the world music explosion. I guess so much attention. I didn't sing very much on that first album. Then when I made my second album and third and fourth album, I was going through a lot of suffering in my life. And I actually thought, you know, it might sound funny, but I thought in a way I was doing a disservice to people because the music was so sad, I thought. It was such an expression of my inner pain, you know? But then mm-hmm. I started getting letters and comments, so many people writing me saying, you know, I was going through such a hard time and your music helped me get through it and brought me so much joy and so much peace. And, you know, for quite a while, I couldn't understand that at all. But gradually, I began to accept that and feel like so honored and so humbled to know that my expression of my feelings and my practice of chanting mantras and you know, searching for that touch of devotion was helping many, 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 many people in their journeys. And I still feel like amazed and humbled and honored that what I do helps others.
Yeah, it's probably the. No, it's beautiful. I think, you know, it's such a gift, I think, for all of us to realize that we're on this journey together. And I did smile to think you must have been growing up in New York City to go from, you know, banjo, percussion, you know, into the Indian ragas. I mean, it's a very rich landscape that you experienced when you were very young, you know, listening to soul, R&B, all these things. And then all these travels and journeys. And I think many people, it's good for us to remember that we are all vulnerable and fragile and moving through our different emotional fields. And I'm sure that when people listen to your voice and music, if they're going through something also deep, they started resonating with that and realizing they're not alone, right? And they probably heard that in your voice and were able to tap into something in their own, you know, in their own inner core, which helped to lift them out of that depression. Yeah. So we're going to take a small station break, Jai, and then we're going to be back. And we're going to be back, and then we're going to be listening to more more of your music. Exactly. Okay.
Okay, great, Kara. Thank you.
The cutting edge of conscious radio, Om Times Radio, IOM FM.
Om Times Magazine is one of the leading online content providers of positivity, wellness, and personal empowerment. A philanthropic organization, their net proceeds are funneled to support worldwide charity initiatives via Humanity Healing International. Through their commitment to creating community and providing conscious content, they aspire to uplift humanity on a global scale. Connect at omtimes.com. Om Times, creating a more conscious lifestyle.
Conflict comes in many forms and often triggers a fight-or-flight response. Some of us gravitate toward conflict, while many will stop at little to nothing to avoid it. Unfortunately, what we resist will persist, which often forces us to face our fear and deal with it head-on. Join me during my show, Conflict Rising, as I discuss the important role of conflict with leaders who have moved through it successfully. Tune in Thursdays at 3 o'clock p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Remember, it's always darkest before the dawn.
With happy clients all over the world, Kara Johnstad knows that your voice is the missing link to more authenticity, abundance, creativity, and health. An internationally acclaimed voice expert, Kara's breakthrough methods have helped thousands of people successfully heal their voice wounds and extinguish the story of self-doubt and shyness forever. Join in group trainings, attend online sessions, schedule one-on-one time, and invite Kara to work with your organization and community. Get started today. Go to www.karajohnstad.com and receive a special guided meditation designed to fine-tune your inner voice and welcome you on the voice journey.
Why was the basketball court all wet? Because the players kept dribbling on it.
The dad joke. Corny, groan-worthy, but also one of the simplest ways to share a moment with your kids.
What did the buffalo say when he dropped his son off for school?
Bye, son.
So take a moment to make your kid laugh, because dad jokes rule. Make your kid laugh today. Go to fatherhood.gov. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
Hi, everybody. Welcome back. I'm Cara Johnstead, and today I'm in studio with the sacred music composer, recording artist, multi-instrumentalist, and ecstatic vocalist, Jai Uttal. And welcome back, Jai. And thank you
so much, Cara,
for sharing your path to music, to finding your voice, and how scary it is sometimes to really stand there in your vulnerability and share your heart with so many people, right? So let's get the people to listen to that voice. Kirtan is a part of the ancient yoga practice called Bhakti Yoga, or the yoga of devotion. You said yourself that you started bringing out a lot of CDs on, you know, sharing with people this path of devotion. I have a track that I would like to share with the listeners called Echoes of Mercy. Would you like to say a few words about that that piece of music before we listen in?
Yeah, sure. The mantra is Om Namo Narayanaya. It's a very, very, very ancient prayer. And it means I bow. Well, superficially, you could say it means I bow to Vishnu. But what it really is saying, I bow to that being who is the indweller of all beings, who exists in eternal repose in the heart of every sentient being. And so I offer myself unto thee, thy will be done.
Mm-hmm. Beautiful. Beautiful. Let's listen in. Echoes of Mercy with Jai Uttal here in studio with me today as we bow, as we long, as we yearn, as we long to understand where we come from and to drink from that mystery. Jai, play with me. Devotion rhymes with ocean. Where does the deep flow of devotion merge with those waves that are constantly coming in and out?
Well, I think the waves, you know, the emotions, the waves of emotion that a human feels, if one allows themselves to feel it, they actually become the fuel of the, they become the engine of devotion. They become the fuel of longing. You know, separation, the feeling of separation from the divine, or even separation from our beloveds, or separation from our own self, we all have those feelings. And the natural, I don't want to say the natural, the common default activity is to do something to distract us from those uncomfortable, anxious feelings of separation from God. That's how I phrase it, frame it, separation from God. To the bhakta, the person on the journey of devotion, those are the times that we, well, rather than turn away from those emotions, we want to sit right in that fire and let it burn higher and higher, and let it fill our practice with light and with energy. To me, the chanting of mantras, in this form of kirtan, you know, there are many ways to chant mantras, and there are many types of mantras. But in kirtan, we focus on very simple mantras that are primarily the names of the deities. So by taking those uncomfortable feelings, those feelings of longing, those waves, those disturbances, and singing them, we find it transforms so quickly into this feeling of presence, of protectedness and safety and love. And you know, I can be singing, and it's really fascinating in a way when I think about it, that my inner world can one moment just feel this abject longing and desperation for connection, and the next second be feel so surrounded by and imbued with God's presence or my guru's presence, and then the next moment, you know, feel cut off again. And you know, the artist is essentially a melodramatic person, but in bhakti, all that drama is used to increase our longing to connect with God.
I love that so much, that you talk about, you know, emotions, the energy in motion, I would say, because there are so many people, and everybody has their own path, right? So you can't say one path is, you know, they're all leading back home as we journey on home. But it's really, I really cherish that, because I think there are many people that want to analyze their emotions, or they say that, you know, grief is, you know, not as high a frequency as, let's say, bliss. I mean, I had that, you know, the other day on the interview, is, you know, somebody, you know, talking about different layers of, you know, one is a heavier emotion and one is a lighter and one is this and that. But just to be able to sit with that and just say, you know, let us feel deeply. What I find fascinating about the voice, as somebody who works a lot with the voice and healing the voice, is the capacity our voice has to integrate and to absorb, and we can never overdo it, right? I mean, we can't cry for 50,000 hours. So if we allow ourselves to go really deeply into that emotion, that it can transform, it has the ability to transform things so fast. You know, we can't even laugh for more than, you know, if we would laugh for 10 minutes at a time, we'd all be, you know, holding our stomachs thinking, oh my goodness gracious, right? So, yeah. So it's just, it's so phenomenal what a tool we have for integrating really complex, deep emotions, and at the same time, the wisdom of our mind. And the voice sits right between the heart and the mind for a reason. It doesn't sit in our big toe, you know, so it can find balance. We find balance. I was going to ask you, because you were talking about you didn't feel so comfortable singing as a kid or as a teenager, and that you kind of found your path, and that you felt, this is how I understood it, that you felt very safe in the kirtan circle because everybody was singing together and nobody was really sticking out. It wasn't at that time yet the solo career that you went on to make. What is, you know, how would you see, as somebody who grew up in the States, kirtan being similar to the call and response that we know from spirituals or from the gospel, you know, where people say, hey, hey, and someone goes, hey, hey, amen, amen, or whatever. Is it very similar?
I would say it's very similar. You know, first of all, in intention, you know, the gospel singing, the call and response singing, and not just from America, but from many, many, many different spiritual cultures. You know, the intention to rise, let the voice rise up and bring our spirits up and connect to, you know, the great spirit. It's the same intention. And in a sense, the practice of just singing, call and response of singing that kind of unifies the heart field, it's the same practice. Kirtan has another component that, for me, is rather mystical, and that is the repetition of the mantras, where these mantras in Sanskrit, as far as I can understand, were given to us by the sages and the seers, mm-hmm. the wise men and wise women of ancient times. And it's like they gave us this gift, this incredible gift of these words that have so much transformational power and divine energy just within the words, mm-hmm. that we don't have to actually do very much, and we just let the words themselves do us, kind of. So
I like that. I like, you know, that. We let the words do us.
Well, it's true, you know. So, and it might not resonate for everyone, of course, but for me, you know, like gospel singing, there's the emotion, there's the calling, there's the listening in terms of call and response, there's the deep breathing and deep emotion that are all kind of the same. And yet we add the component of these transformational mantras that to me have a power that is beyond, you know, intellectual understanding. And well, then it just really adds incredible potency to the practice. Now, so I'm not saying that it's better. I'm just saying, for me, it's better.
I was just curious. I think, you know, I was just curious because we have this call and response in many different cultures. And, you know, I was just curious if, you know, if there's any difference for you. Did you know that the banjo originally came over from Western Africa?
Of course I did. I'm a deep student of the banjo and deep devotee to the banjo.
I actually learned that recently. I learned that about 2 years ago. I associated it, of course, with, Appalachian music, and I didn't know that. So it was really new for me. I found that fascinating. Yeah,
my love of the banjo has always been, like, you know, I like bluegrass, but I've never, and country, but that's never really been where my focus on the banjo has been. I've always been so in love with the really, really, really old, well, they call it old-timey music, but the old music that was sung on the banjo before, and played on the banjo before bluegrass, before pop commercial popularity, the mountain music, and that came from the slaves, and you know, sort of intermingling of the slaves and the poor whites, and it's an amazing tradition. It's you know, continues to inspire me all the time.
Mountain mantras, Jai. Mountain mantras. What do you think? Banjo and you solo. Mountain mantras.
Mountain mantras. Well, Kara, I done it. And I plan and hope to do more.
But
yeah,
oh, my goodness gracious. I mean, so mantras, then explain to the people that are listening. We're talking about kirtan. We're talking about the devotional path. We're talking about the practice of kirtan. What would you say, how would you describe, what is a mantra for people that might not know what a mantra is?
Okay. Mantra is a word or a group of words or a phrase in the Sanskrit language that... how do I word it? That combines the mind and the heart and unites in the soul and eliminates thought and brings one to transcendence. Now that sounds...
You said that very well.
That's a big statement. And, you know, of course, Rome wasn't built in a day. And you know, the practice of mantras is a many, many lifetime journey. But essentially, that's what they are. They're words that purify the heart, purify the mind. And, you know, some people say the word mantra means, like, subdue the mind. But I don't like that, the energy of that definition. Because we're not trying to subdue anything. We're trying to illuminate everything. And mantra, you know, are these power syllables, power words. And it's a vast science. It's a yogic science. And there are mantras that are, you know, 1,008 syllables long. And there are mantras, simple mantras, like, for example, my favorite mantra that my guru gave me, which is just Ram, 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 mm-hmm. Ram. Couldn't be easier. And that just means God. But, you know, when we sing the mantras, sometimes we think about the meanings, but for me, it's more like the mantras become this vessel that will hold all of our prayers, all of our feelings, all of our joy, all of our anxiety, all of our pain, and into this great, great rush of cosmic oceanic wind and take it to the heavens, to the source. So in those periods, you know, like, I don't actually think about what the word is meaning. I'm just like diving into, well, both the music and the words themselves. One thing about kirtan that I've also loved so much is that kirtan doesn't dictate what style of music should be sung. Or should be used, I guess. Kirtan can be sung with any kind of style of music. So, you know, back to a little bit before when we were talking about emotions, there are some spiritual traditions that say kind of like overcome the emotions, subdue the emotions, and overcome your individuality and uniqueness, and we are all one. But I think that our uniqueness and our individuality, God-given as it is one of the keys to our finding our path in life. So around music, you know, somebody could sing a mantra, Shri Ram, Jai Ram, Jai Jai Ram, in 1,000 different musical styles. And each person, as an artist, digs into themselves and looks and longs to find the most poignant and deep and personal expression of their feelings as expressed in a melody or a chord structure or a rhythm. And then the mantra is, you know, rides on top of that. So there is actually a guy I know who does bluegrass kirtan, and there's a lot of electronica kirtan, and there's so many different things. And it's not like I like it all or that it all resonates with me, but I do like the fact that people can explore and express themselves uniquely and individually and still be in this practice of chanting these mantras.
Beautiful. We're going to take a short break. Jai Utal. It's lovely to have you here today with me.
Great to be here, Kara.
bringing a more conscious lifestyle to your world. Om Times Radio, IOM FM.
Ascending Hearts is no ordinary dating site, but a spiritual dating site with a purpose, to link you with your soulmate. We engineer the serendipity so you can trust that you will attune with someone that has the same matching vibration as you. Ascending Hearts, the conscious dating site for the spiritually aware. Try Ascending Hearts for free, ascendinghearts.com.
I'm Kathy Williams, host of Sexy Mom Abundant Life radio show on Thursdays at 5 p.m. Eastern, 2 p.m. Pacific. On the show, we explore living abundantly in every area of your life. Ways to let go of limiting patterns and beliefs and to step into the flow of creativity and possibility, knowing you are supported by the universe.
Imagine being fired because of who you love. Imagine being denied medical treatment because of who you marry. Imagine being evicted because of who you are. Millions of Americans don't have to imagine this. They have to live it. Because in 31 states, it's legal to discriminate against LGBT people. Get the facts at beyondido.org. Brought to you by the Gill Foundation and the Ad Council.
Hi, everybody. Welcome back. I'm Kara Johnstad, and today I'm with the sacred music composer, recording artist, multi-instrumentalist, and ecstatic vocalist, Ajay Uttal, in studio talking about voice, singing, mantra, chant, kirtan, bhakti path, all the good stuff. Ajay, how are you doing?
I'm doing good. I like
very beautiful. Yeah, we've been talking about it all, and what I really appreciate is this thread that you've woven through the interview of authenticity and of really relaxing into what we are, being it that we feel fragile or we feel blissful or we feel nervous or we feel ecstatic, or and that we can feel all of that maybe at the same time, and then to dedicate that, or that's how I understood you, to really give that into music and to allow the chants to anchor themselves within us. And I'd like to play for our listeners a track called Twameva. Is that correct?
Yes.
Tell me what that word means. For someone who doesn't know what the word means, tell me what that word means.
The word means you are, or thou art. It's a more classical Sanskrit, so it would be more like thou art. And the song says, but I'll say in more, you know, personal English, you are my mother, you are my father, you are my brother, you are my lover, you are my friend. You are all wealth, you are all wisdom. You are my all in all, my Lord of Lords, supreme.
Beautiful. Let's listen in.
Yeah,
you are.
It's a very traditional prayer.
I like it.
Sarvam,
We are back at Voice Rising, and that is the wonderful voice of Jai Utal with Twameva, Thou Art. And Jai, you were talking in the beginning of the interview about how, as a kid, somewhere along the line, you felt like you lost your voice. At some point, of course, you found it. Otherwise, you wouldn't be the great artist that you are today. I saw that you also work with kids, Kirtan kids, that you also go into schools, or that's what I saw, and support children. You know, at this time where we are in our world, we have kids struggling really with a lot of anxiety, with climate change, with violence, with everything else. How can we help the kids that are the voices of the future keep that channel wide open, keep those vibrational fields open, keep the emotions stable, integrated, so that they don't worry about falling into anxiety attacks or depression, that they have tools to help them to master or to go through this life?
Well, it's a huge question, and it's certainly very much part of our life as our son has just entered high school. So, mm-hmm. And I know there's, just developmentally, certain aspects of separation and moods that are coming up that weren't there before. But from the very beginning of when he was a baby, my wife and I have been singing with him and singing to him and singing prayers, and not just prayers, songs, and just maintaining that atmosphere of song around him. And when he started going to school, or even preschool, I was going to the classes and teaching very simple Indian chants and getting the kids to sing with me. And it was a pure joy experience for all of us. And now, Ezra is my son. He's quite shy of singing, but mm-hmm. I expect that will come around, but I'm getting another call. Let me just decline that. I thought I had that turned off. But anyway, but he is deeply musical, and he plays piano, and he's been in a band, original band, for many, many years when they were very young. And I see with him, a little bit of a reflection of my journey, where first it was the music that allowed my emotions to flow, you know, before singing. And
right.
I think that deep inside of him, that he has in his DNA the tools, but they got to take a little while to come out, and to come out as him rather than to come out as me. However, my great joy is, like in our last tour in Europe just this past summer, by the end of the tour, Ezra was playing the whole set with me. He was playing on grand piano, and it was all kirtan. Mm. And he wasn't singing, but he was so much a part of it. So I feel very happy about the way he's growing. And as much as I can, you know, the kids are teenagers now. They're not 100% interested in me. But while they were younger, I'm saying in our circle, while they were younger, as much as I could, I gathered them together to sing together. And I've done a lot of events just for kids. And I made that album called Kirtan Kids.
Yeah.
Which I love so much. It's, you know, I'm singing, but mostly the voices are kids' voices. And we had preschoolers, we had first graders, second graders, third graders, you know, and Ezra has a couple of star moments, of course. And, you know, I think it's so valuable to plant those seeds when the kids are really young. Like both my wife and I, we never excluded our son or anybody's kids from any of our events. My wife is a yoga teacher and does a lot of trainings. And you know, the kids are welcome. And sometimes, you know, it veers towards a little more chaos than I'd like. But most of the time, the energy and the message is inclusivity. And if we can't bring our kids into this, what are we doing? For years, Ezra would sit on my lap as I led kirtan. And
nice, beautiful.
That was that was bliss. Now, I also have done quite a lot of visits to the prison, to the local prison here, San Quentin. It's a maximum security prison, and I go in there and sing kirtan and talk about kirtan with the interfaith group of prisoners. And they are so appreciative, and they get so much from it. And, you know, I've had amazing experiences with them. Just, I guess these guys, you know, it's obviously not everyone in the prison. It's just sort of a small group that comes to me, about 50 people. And they consider it a monastery, and they consider it the house of healing. They call San Quentin the house of healing. And they are so deeply immersed in these practices of devotion and meditation, that it's kind of awe-inspiring. And I was told, this was really surprised me, also made me feel good, but also was disturbing in a way, was that on death row, my CDs are the most popular CDs. Which, you know, that's just like, wow. You know, how I'm so humbled that could possibly be true. You know, how could that be? That's so amazing that even these people at the end, you know, at the end of their line, what I do and what comes through me can help them. I mean, I'm just like so blown out by it.
Jay, if you had one message for our world where we are today, or if you had one little golden nugget you'd want people to understand about voice, about music, about creating a sound world and a sound body. I mean, your work is obviously has really reached, if it's, you know, if it's one of the most requested CDs on death row. I mean, it's you've gone from kindergartens to inside of prisons, and I'm sure to many, many yoga centers and many beautiful festivals. You have a wealth of wisdom that you've carried on your path. What is your message in the moment? What can we do to, you know, continue the path that will bring our world into harmony?
Well, I you know, that's such a big question, But I think that the best way to answer it at this moment is with a very, very small answer, which is that on a day-to-day basis, to practice kindness, to be, you know, to go out of our way to be kind to someone. You know, of course, there's so much more to say to that question, and I'm not even addressing it in terms of singing, but just in terms of how are we going to save this world. Well, it starts with simple kindness, and then, you know, in my last album, Rootrock Rama, we made a partnership with a company called One Tree Planted, and so every CD that gets sold plants a tree.
Beautiful.
Which I think is also super important.
Very important. We're saving, hopefully, the climate and the world, and your voice is a very, very big part of that tapestry that's out there. I thank you so much for being with me, for taking that time to share all your stories, and I hope to have you back again at Voice Rising.
Thank you so much, Cara. It was a pleasure talking with you, and to all your listeners, I just say hi and God bless.
Blessings. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.